superchargers, headlights, and more. With over 122 million parts, eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Stay on your A-game with all the parts you need at the prices you want. It's easy to bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
I just sat with Drake May. I was in North Carolina.
This is the Rich Eisen Show.
Everybody in the office is like, you know, he is so young, but he is a killer, Ryan. Yeah, I was a killer too.
Live from the Rich Eisen Show studio in Los Angeles.
You walk into a room and you're 21 years old and you're supposed to be the leader of 33-year-old men in that locker room and stuff who are trying to put food on the table for the families. It's a different story when things kind of start going south.
Earlier on the show, ESPN college football and NFL analyst Robert Griffin III. Coming up, NFL quarterback coach John Beck, actor Ramon Rodriguez, and now it's Rich Eisen.
All right, everybody, welcome to this edition of the Rich Eisen Show, the second hour. We had a great chat with Robert Griffin III in hour number one. It's NFL draft week. As soon as we're done with tomorrow's show, the whole crew hops a flight to Detroit. We're doing Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday show from the side of the NFL draft right here on the Roku channel, this Rich Eisen Show, terrestrial radio affiliate, Sirius XM, Odyssey, and more. We are genuinely jacked to do all of that and also thrilled to have kicking off hour number two right here on the Rich Eisen Show in studio, the 40th overall pick of the 2007 draft of the Miami Dolphins, now one of the top throwing coaches in all the land, John Beck, here in person. Good to see you, John. How are you?
I'm doing good. That sounds like a long time ago, the 2007 draft.
Tell me about it.
I'm trying to stay feeling young, but that man right there kind of aged me a little bit, didn't it?
Well, I mean, but it's just before we get to the here and now, I'd love to get your thoughts on just the development of quarterbacks in the NFL and how the clock seems to be sped up quite a bit for a lot of these kids that get. I mean, we've darn near had three straight seasons with 70 different starting quarterbacks in the NFL, and then there's no practice time for a lot of these kids. And I'm wondering what you think of the current setup for success for a lot of these prospect at quarterbacks coming into the NFL these days, John.
Well, I think every team is trying to figure that out because they're trying to get it right. But you're right. With the new collective bargaining agreements and how less and less time is there for the coaches to be able to be with their players in the offseason, but yet the expectation on these highly drafted quarterbacks just continues to increase. Because of stories like, well, Matt Ryan came in and played so well. Well, Joe Flacco came in and played well. Well, Justin Herbert came in and played well.
Stroud is the latest one of
right,
that.
CJ, like, right, hey, well, man, guys should be able to do it. Well, everybody's situation is so unique and so different. What experiences have they had coming into the NFL? What experience are they landing in, or what's it going to be with their new team? What is that franchise set up for? I thought Robert Griffin said some really good things. You know, I got to sit in the green room and hear his interview. He said some really good things. He understands it because he's been a quarterback in the league. You know, and not every situation is set up right now for a young player to succeed. And so it's tough because people are expecting more and more that, hey, I bring a guy in, he should be able to play early. But that's asking a lot when there's so many other factors at play.
And again, you know, you're brought in to help clean up things or get them ready for the next level or what have you. And I'm sure it's different situations that you're being asked to help a prospect with. You can't control who they're drafted by. You can't control that they go to a certain spot. So what would you say is just generally what you hope for one of the guys when you say good luck that they have set up for themselves?
So I tell all those guys, you know, based off of an experience I had as a player and then experiences I've seen other players have, I just try to say, look, you don't know where you're going to land, but what you can focus on is tools for you to give yourself the best chance, right? Tools for success. I say, look, there's got to be some things that you say, regardless of the situation I'm in, here's what I'm working towards. And then I kind of have to let the chips fall where they may. Then I have to have the tools to be able to handle that. Like, can I sail stormy waters? So I like guys that have had to go through adversity. Like, you brought up the letter that Mike Penix wrote to the NFL. I loved it. I thought, because you know what? He's going to land somewhere where there's going to be adversity. And you want somebody that knows that. Sometimes it's difficult for the people that they haven't experienced enough of it, because now all of a sudden it's when those seas get really stormy, how comfortable are they in adversity? And so I like it when I see a guy that has had to go through ups and downs, that's had to battle through, whether it's injury, coaching changes, change of offensive coordinators, you know, being in a situation where they're playing for a school that has tons of pride. And guess what? You had to go through a losing season and they're blaming it on you and the head coach. Okay, battle back from that. Those experiences are what the NFL feels like for the majority of teams. You know, you have your situations where things work well. It looks like it's great. There's always stuff going on. Even on the teams that end up at the end of the year winning a championship. Look at Kansas City. How many people thought in the beginning of the season through those first like 8 to 10 weeks that Kansas City was going to be the team? They were going through ups and downs, but it's the guys that know how to battle through that.
John Beck, throwing coach here on the Rich Eisen Show. Is that the proper, like, what's the term that you'd like to have?
I don't even know if there's a term, bro. I just like football. Right. I like quarterbacks, trying to do the best that I can. Okay.
I try to be, you know, kind about it. I mean, Mike Del Tufo, who's on the other side there, likes to be referred to as the audio executive of the Rich Eisen Show.
I mean, you
Show.
Know what? Like a consultant for quarterbacks. And
I'm a consultant. I'm an audio executive.
No, you're not. We want to be called an audio executive. I just try to be respectful.
No, I get it.
When did you first start working with Jaden Daniels? Both. When did that happen?
So, Jaden, well, I got to bring up the name Taylor Kelly. Taylor's one of our coaches at 3DQB, that former Arizona State quarterback, spent some time with Arizona in their offseason, went back and coached at Arizona State. Mm-hmm. Being us down here in Southern California doing training, Jaden going to Arizona State from Southern California, there was this great tie with Taylor Kelly, one of our coaches. So Taylor's worked a lot with him, but Jaden's been at our field probably doing training probably 3+ years. Spent a lot of time with him.
Arizona State and the back end of Arizona State?
Yeah, kind of back end of Arizona State, all of the LSU stuff. And so there's really a team of people. Like, you know, I get to sit here today as kind of like the person that talks about working with the guys, but it's always a team of people. Mm-hmm. And then also their coaches as well. We have coaches, you know, that we have been really close with at LSU. And so there's that communication between the player, his coach, our coaches. It's been 3 years of a lot of work that Jaden really, you know, it's a testament to his grind. It's a testament to the way that he said, how can I level up? It started about 2 years ago saying, okay, this is the kind of quarterback I want to be. Here's the time, the effort, the energy that I'm going to put into it. And he dedicated himself and it showed up in a lot of ways. And, you know, as crazy as this may sound, Taylor Kelly, the person whose name I brought up last summer, he said, guys, watch, I think he's going to win the Heisman. And it was after a workout where we had a bunch of NFL guys on the field. And then Jaden brought his LSU wideouts out to the field. And when they got done throwing, he goes, I think he's going to win the Heisman.
And because he just had a certain way? I mean,
the way that he was performing, the way that it looked, and also the ability that he has, you know, like the ability he has to take off with the football. He just has that added element that is not just okay, but it's elite. And we got to see how he progressed as a thrower. There's like this 20-month period that we talk about that we say that guy improved so much as a thrower. And then understanding of the offense, the chemistry that he was continuing to build with his players,
yes.
And also the coaching staff. They get to know him better. It's not Jaden Daniels year one at LSU. It's now him having gone through year one, going into year two. And when all those pieces add up, you can say, man, if the stars align, if there's not injuries, if guys can stay healthy, if the defense plays well, he's going to be impressive.
Well, if you don't mind me, as we go through your roster here of people that are in your care, just talking about some of the red flags that you constantly hear surrounding these guys and how you would respond to it or how you have spoken to him, how to respond to it. With Jaden Daniels, it's him potentially getting blown up in the NFL and how, you know, the conversation that we saw from my colleague Tom Pelissero speaking to a bunch of unnamed executives or scouts or coaches that, hey, Anthony Richardson's bigger than him. He didn't last more than a third of the season. How's Jaden Daniels going to be able to handle all that? How do you respond to that?
I mean, when you turn the tape on, he does get blown up sometimes. And I think he knows it and kind of laughs about it, too. Like, yeah, you know, I got to keep improving in that area. And look, it's tough to say. There's something about people, the way their bodies are put together. I've seen some dudes that just look absolutely as put together as you could ask for. And you're wondering, oh my gosh, like there's no way that he's going to get hurt. And he gets hurt. And then you see somebody else that they don't look like, you know, man, gosh, if that guy takes some hits, he might, you know, really get hurt.
Mm-hmm.
But he doesn't ever sustain like the super serious injuries. Yeah, the sprained ankle, the AC separation. There's little things here or there, but it's not the serious, serious injury. So, you know, yes, he's been blown up. I've watched games where I'm like, oh, man. And he's had to leave the game and he comes back in, but he's always just kept battling. And so to me, it kind of goes to that point of, I don't think you can say, I can guarantee that this player is or is not going to get injured. But I think for a guy that has played in games and been hit pretty hard, he's always finished out seasons. He may not have always had games that he played every single snap, but he came back in the game. So it tells me he's a fighter. He's going to play with some type of bump and bruise. And for whatever reason, he's been a little bit lucky, you know, knock on wood. He hasn't sustained like those major, major injuries.
I'm assuming there's not, but I'll ask you anyway. Is there a drill that you can run to not get hit? I mean,
I don't know, man.
You're walking around somebody with a big broom and just sweeping it and he's got to slide under it or something.
I mean, I've seen coaches
like that
do like sliding drills. I've seen coaches that do like, hey, when we're going to get down, you're going to go head first, feet first, all this stuff. I mean, I just kind of think like there's certain people that have a knack for it. Like I look at Lamar Jackson. He has a knack of just boom, getting down, like avoiding major, major blowups. And I don't know if you can teach it. I don't know if it's something like, I've had that question asked to me. Is it the way, the style the kid played growing up through Pop Warner ball, all the way up into junior high ball? Is it something when you are just the most elite athlete on the field, you may not have had to have learned it, but maybe some of the guys that might have developed a little bit later might have been a little bit the less mature. I'm going to get what I can get, then I'm going to get down. And then as they take off maturity and they excel, they've grabbed a hold of that ability to not take a hit. I don't know. I mean, I don't think that there's like a specific drill, like let's bring this drill into camp and we'll fix this.
But you speak to him about it though, right?
Yeah. I mean, kind of like in a joking way, we'll be like, bro, hey, you know, you got to get down. He kind of laughs and he's like, oh man, you know, like that one wasn't, you know, I wasn't expecting that guy to catch me that clean. I mean, I think he's smart about it. I think it's something that he recognizes as well because the NFL season now is longer. You know, so not only is the punishment a little bit different, but now the season's longer. And if you want to play into the playoffs, you know, you're now talking about like, how do I feel when I'm at game 19, 20, 21 of the season?
Well, I mean, my only response to here where he says, I didn't think he could catch me like that is a story Marshall Faulk told me, being the first running back next to Peyton Manning in his rookie season. When Manning, I threw, did he throw 28 interceptions his rookie season or something crazy like that?
It was high.
That?
He led the week.
And by the way, could you imagine if that happened in this day and age?
Yeah, a little different.
About,
I know.
With all the TV shows talking about what's wrong with this person. And, you know, you
28,
see.
28.
28. And so Marshall said Peyton would say the same thing pretty much after throwing interceptions. Like, I didn't think that guy could get there. And Marshall, at one point, just midway through the season, goes, hey, Peyton, this is the NFL. Everybody can get
there.
Yeah,
that's a good
one. So my answer would be like, hey, in the NFL, everyone's going to be able to catch it like that.
Yeah, I do like that. I'm a big mindset guy with quarterbacks. I do like that Peyton had that, like, I'm surprised that guy got there. Because I do think there is something to not being in an avoidance state. Like, you don't want to be performing trying to avoid mistakes. But Peyton kind of, as a young player, having that confidence to like, I believe it. I trust it. Oh, I'm surprised that the outcome was an interception, you know?
Yeah.
I like that. That just popped into my head
there
as you're talking.
I'm happy,
you know,
like, see, I like
I'm a big mindset guy when it comes to like, look, quarterbacking, like there's just some things you got to do. Like you got to be able to take a beating in a game. You kind of sucked. You kind of threw some crappy passes, but there's that mindset that you continuously, you're going to just, I'm going to trust, I'm going to believe, I'm going to cut it loose and I'll learn from the plays that didn't go well. And I was kind of surprised that that one went like that. I wasn't anticipating that. Because if you get in the mindset where this can happen when a young quarterback gets some major scars, as they start to play to avoid mistakes, they're out there trying to like not make another mistake, not hurt the team again. And so it's this balance between like, I have to be smart about the chances I take because I don't want to hurt my team. But I also got to give my team a chance by continuing playing confidently.
Let it rip. Got to just keep letting it rip, hitting that back foot, letting it rip. So I'm glad I left you with that, but you're not leaving us just yet. I'd like to take a break and talk about some of the other prospects that you have. J.J. McCarthy and Michael Penix Jr. are two that jump off the list. I've got John Beck, throwing coach, throwing consultant, throwing executive. Is that right?
I like it.
Okay.
She's moving up.
Keep moving up the flip chart as we come back.
Throwing president.
Right here on the Rich Eisen Show. Throwing president, John Beck, when we return. Hey, folks, it's time for the NFL draft, which means for me, I need a good night's sleep because if I don't have one, I'm just not myself. You know the deal. You know exactly how important it is to have quality sleep. It's a game changer for all of us. So Sleep Number helps me. My Sleep Number setting is 60. My wife's setting is 70. We both get a great night's sleep because we could adjust the firmness of our mattress on each side. Improve your quality sleep because Sleep Number learns how you sleep thanks to their smart beds and provide personalized insights to help you sleep better. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
America starts the day with America in the Morning.
First of three pushes of storminess.
Hi, I'm John Trout, your host for the latest news, politics, entertainment, business, and weather.
A speech with political overtones.
Our staff of correspondents provide a fast-paced look at the world with specialized reports from where news happens.
The judge's decision was based on finding there is a
likelihood. So far, the central bank appears to be threading that.
Concise, accurate, and fresh each day.
America in the Morning, the podcast, available wherever you listen.
Back here on the Roku channel, radio audience rejoins in 2 minutes. We're just chit-chatting with John Beck. We're chit-chatting in the commercial break. You just played golf at Pebble, right?
Yeah, at Pebble.
An event with who's
it's the Forever Young Foundation. Steve Young and Jerry Rice, they put on an event.
Is that the BYU money. Connection there?
It is. Steve's always been great. When I played in BYU and in the NFL, I always got to be involved in the Forever Young events.
Okay.
They do one in Arizona, one at Pebble Beach, and one in Park City, Utah.
Okay. In terms of status as a quarterback, if you're bad at golf, that is just unacceptable, right?
Yeah.
As a professional quarterback.
Depending on how long you guys have me on the show, I have the best bad at golf story of when I got drafted to the Dolphins. I don't want to chew up time, though.
We'll do that. We'll do that before.
Okay,
before
you go. Then. It involves Dan Marino and me. And flip-flops. And it is...
Okay. That's what we call a tease. Best professional, best quarterback golfer that you've ever heard of, been around.
Might be Dan Marino. I mean, Dan was very good.
Tried out for the Open. He did.
Yeah.
I'll never forget that. When Dan Marino tried out for the U.S. Open and he didn't qualify, he came close. And he basically said that it was just the mental part of it. He just couldn't get every shot down. And I thought to myself, this is a guy with the quickest trigger in the history of the NFL, had to know where everybody was, knew where every single defender was going to be, and he was brilliant at that. And golf just shows you how much mental focus.
Man, I love that
focus.
About golf. Yeah, it's challenging. I'll say, like, my golf eyes back then were probably a little bit different than what my golf eyes are now.
Yeah.
But Dan was impressive. I've played Justin Herbert, can bomb it. You know, he wants to be more consistent, but he's very talented.
That sounds like a tracks with Justin Herbert on the Rich Eisen
and
show
then
with John Beck.
And I can segue into, we can talk about, and J.J. McCarthy, he's a talented golfer. And we can roll that right into J.J.
Look at you, John Beck, transitioning himself for our radio audience. We're talking golf and quarterbacks in our Roku-only segment, but good to have you transition because J.J. McCarthy, obviously, I'm biased when it comes to him. And I just loved watching him play at Michigan. I'm going to miss the heck out of him because just the way that he commanded everything was awesome. Best one. And when Harbaugh said he's the best quarterback Michigan's had.
I
don't know how you could say no to that because Brady at the time was splitting reps with Drew Henson.
Yeah.
That had nothing. He had nothing to do with that. But, I mean, Jim is including himself in this category here.
Yeah. I know. I think that's cool, too, when a guy somebody that was great at Michigan that, you know, fans revere and love him and everything, and Jim's like, no, I think this guy
is better.
That's pretty awesome of Jim. And look, it's easy to love a lot of stuff about JJ. I've been super fortunate. Like 2.5 years ago, one of my coaches from the Ravens became the quarterback coach there. We got connected. I got to start training JJ. From the get-go, the kid has so many things going for him. You can just see the love of the game, the work ethic, the talent, the drive. He has so many pieces. I mean, it was very cool to see it play out on the biggest stage of Michigan to put together a year like that. And here's the thing, too. I sat in the stands for that TCU game. I was there for the playoff game.
Me, too.
He made some great plays, and I know there was a couple plays here or there that he's like, oh, I wish I could get that one back. To go through that heartbreak, but then to know we have a chance this next year to do it, and they run the table and do it. You know, that's pressure that's going to feel like what the NFL feels like. You know, like there was an expectation that they felt. There was, as they were going through this thing, people are saying, could Michigan be the best team? And when you're the quarterback of a team like that, whether or not how many times you throw a football in a game, you still deal with what it feels like to be the pressure of a potential national championship team.
Well, and again, the red flag for him, and as we brought up, you know, with Jaden Daniels, and when we talk Penix, I'll bring up a red flag that's specific to him as well. The red flag for J.J. McCarthy is exactly what you alluded to, the sense that Michigan's dominant run with him at quarterback over a two-year period, with the exception of losing to TCU in that Fiesta Bowl, it's... I wouldn't say in spite of him. It's not that negative, the red flag. It's as if it's not because of him. And the quarterback, that's what you need, is to win games. What the championship games is, we're winning because of you. You're putting us on your back, and he's never been asked to do that. How do you respond to that?
Well, I think it's okay for me to share this. Like, I sometimes obviously know things that I don't share. But I think it's okay to share this. Like, JJ knows that. Teams ask that. Teams ask, why did they take the ball out of his hand? Or why did they take the air out of the ball to win football games? And his response, I thought, was great. And I'll, you know, I feel comfortable sharing that. He says, look, we knew to be a national championship football team, there was going to be a game somewhere where we were going to have to win in the fourth quarter, throwing the ball in the second half, putting together a two-minute drive, winning, throwing the football in the red zone. Because that's what teams say. You don't see a lot of drop back passing in the red zone because they're going to be dominant handing the football off. You don't see a lot of fourth quarter, third down passing the football because they're usually playing with a lead. So how do we evaluate this? I love his response. He's like, we practice that always. We were always practicing against our really good defense, one against ones. We practice 2-minute drives. We practice third down drop back passing. We practice red zone passing because somewhere along the way, if we wanted to be and achieve what we were set out to do, we were going to have to do it. So we practiced it. So he's like, I know my reps that everybody sees on game day, it doesn't show all of that, but I know all the work that we've put in as a team, that I've put in as a player in that aspect of my game in practice against a great defense. And they did it against Alabama. They had to come back in the fourth quarter, throw in the football, win a game against Alabama. So, you know, in the game that he needed to do it, he did it. But I know that in the evaluation, that's the thing that all teams, they all ask that. They ask that of him. They ask that of me. They ask that of, I'm sure, his coaches. But look, it's a challenge, right? And the thing I love most about J.J. McCarthy, he approaches the game of football the way you're supposed to play it. I tell teams this. I've been on some rough teams in the NFL. And you gather together as players and you say, look, to get out of this funk, we got to play this game like when we were kids. And we just let go of the outcome. We let go of these things. And we just play the game because we love it. I think JJ is the epitome of that. And the way that he plays this game is how you're supposed to play the game. You're supposed to keep that. Look, Brett Favre used to say it all the time. Like, this is a kid's game that we get to pay, and we get paid a king's ransom. Like, you got to have that inside of you that you're playing the game for the right reason. And I think he does that always.
Well, I'll follow up on that with what I've been saying here multiple times, and I'll say it again, and I'm going to see him Wednesday. I believe he's coming on our show Wednesday in studio in Detroit. Two things. One, the throws, when he was asked to make them, some of the throws got me off the couch because I've never seen a Michigan quarterback throw it like that. Windows, the types of windows that he would hit. Oh, my God. I mean, and in the horseshoe, Michigan was struggling in the first quarter. He made some big deep throws that flipped the game.
Yeah.
Also, this year, in a touchdown that was highly disputed by Buckeye fans at the time and still to this day, the one to Roman Wilson,
yeah,
where Buckeye fans thought it should have been an interception on the goal line because the defender ripped the ball out of Roman Wilson's hands. That throw was courageous. It was eye-popping. It was exactly what you want second, you know, window type throw. Like, you want these types of throws from your quarterback at the professional level. That's one thing. Two, in this day and age, John Beck, we're talking about transfer portals. We're talking about NIL, where if you're not getting the spotlight or platform that you think can showcase your game, you're out of there. If you're not maybe making as much money as you possibly can because you're not getting the platform or the spotlight that you're getting, you're going to complain. You're going to talk about it. Knowing this could be his last season at Michigan, hands it off 32 straight times against Penn State, isn't asked to put it on his arm. How many times did he publicly complain about it? I'll give you the answer. It's Mike Sanristil's number. Zero. Zero. That's what you want in a kid at the next level. And I have now said my piece. You know what I'm saying?
I get it.
I'm clearly pounding the table, but I also understand when you see somebody like Drake May, who's bigger, and two Heisman Trophy winners also in this mix, that he's not going to be number one overall. I understand that, you know?
And I think for his sake, I always want to see the quarterbacks go to the best place for them.
Sure.
You know, it's always exciting to go high. You know, you want to, man, it sounds cool, right? Go high as you can. JJ's going to benefit from more experience in doing those things at the NFL level. You know, the one thing I always say to guys is, look, be competitive. You have to be, I mean, quarterback should be the most competitive dude on the field. But don't compete on draft day of feeling like you have to go higher than somebody else or your pick needs to prove to you how good you are. Like last year's dang MVP was the last pick of the draft the year previous, you know? Mm-hmm. Like Dak Prescott, mid-round pick. Like he almost won the MVP last year.
Lamar almost fell out of the first round, but look who went and got him.
Yeah, like so it's like don't worry about that stuff. And speaking of JJ, I want the team that picks him to be a place that's going to allow him to develop in the right way, the right areas. We already know the kid checks all the boxes of so many things.
Right.
And like you say, we want to be able to give a guy first-round money and know that he's still going to be a team player. We want to know that that is where he's at. He's, you know, in leadership. True leadership is about what you do for the other people around you. It's not just focusing on yourself, the me. I want more money. I want this deal. I want the focus. I want the fame. No. True leadership is about what you do for the people around you, how you connect to them, how you serve them. I think that's what also makes JJ so great. Like, he knew Michigan football was Michigan football. That's all right. I'm the leader of the football team of Michigan football, and we're going to win however we have to.
John Beck here on the Rich Eisen Show. Another of your clients is Michael Penix Jr. When did you first enter his orbit?
So similar to JJ, connection through coaches, connection through an agent, because of another NFL player that I train. And I got to actually meet Mike's dad about 3 years ago, and then Mike 2 years ago. And it's been awesome the entire time. I heard RG3 say that he believes he's probably the best pure thrower in this draft class. And it would be hard to be more pure than Mike.
What makes it so pure? I mean, we talk frequently on this show that NFL films can't wait for him to get to the next level because that's the spiral that they zoom in. Like they love the spiral zooming in. And he's got an NFL film spiral.
Yeah. You know, and I'm not taking away from anybody else's
of course,
spiral,
I understand.
Right? You know, like,
right.
I mean, Mike's arm action with the ball and how it comes out. I mean, look, there's a combination of some things. It's his arm action. It's his hands. It's the ball. It's so many things. But whenever receivers that haven't seen him before get out on the field, they always, oh man, that dude, that guy's ball is just humming and it is pure. And that's to that. Like, that's one thing also, the path, the repetitive path of a pure throw. You know, it's not just like arm talent, but it's what the ball is doing in the air. It's how cleanly it flies. You know, we've had players that have been really, really star players in this league, guys that are currently in it, guys that were in it and have come back to help coach, and they're on the field and they all recognize it. That guy, man, he throws a just pure ball. The other thing that people are surprised by, how strong his arm is. A lot of people, I see his arm on tape, and then they see it field level, and they always say, wow, I did not realize that's how much juice is coming on that ball.
And red flag for him is obviously injury history, but he's, how are you going to address that, right? Other than look at what I've done since I've come back from injury. That's what he wrote about in his Players
Tribune
piece.
And I think he did
a great
job.
He did. The red flag you hear about him on the field is the way he played against Michigan and how, like, that's going to be the next level type defense he's going to face. Intermediate type passing game, short passing game, kind of an issue? How do you respond to that, John?
Okay, so obviously the Texas game was better for Mike than the Michigan game.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't mean because the Michigan game happened, those are can'ts, right? You know, there was a few plays here or there where they have some things in their offense that are reads. The wideout is reading on the fly. Mike has two option routes, a high one and a low one. There's a lot going on. I heard you talk in the previous segment about you hear from people Mike's ability to read a defense.
Spectacular.
Absolutely true. Some of the things that he's processing during the play, it's outstanding. And so he's processing and he's anticipating something from the wide receiver, and they've done such a good job all year of being on the same page. There were a few plays in that game, they just weren't on the same page. So some of the throws that some people might say, oh, that's inaccurate, the root of it is actually them being on the same page, mm-hmm. not Mike's inability to be accurate at that space on the field. So I believe that he's a guy that I've seen hit every throw across the field. You know, and the things that he's worked on and moving off of the spot were on full display in the Texas game. And so I think teams that really like Mike, they're looking for the things that say, here's what we're getting, and then here's how we can help take that to the next level. Some people are trying to discredit Mike. They're going to say, well, look, that's proof of why he can't do that. You can find what you're looking for. You know, that's the bias of things. And I just think the teams that like him, they're the ones that are seeing some of those plays in like the Texas game, in some of the championship games he played in, and saying, see, there's proof again that I know what I'm seeing is there.
Also, isn't processing one of the most important, if not the most important traits you want to have in a prospect going from one level to the next?
Absolutely.
That because, my goodness, our defensive coordinators really good in the National Football League, and Rod Woodson once told me, like, the most adaptive creature ever created is an NFL defense, that they will adapt week to week, season to season,
quarter to quarter. 100%.
I mean, processing is kind of big.
Yeah, it's huge. You know, when I first get guys, whether I've had experience with them or not, I like to go through, give me your three best college games, give me your three worst. That's the starting point.
Right.
And let's go through what you're processing on the field. It starts with the way you're calling plays. How's your offense structured? Like, how do you have to memorize a play? How do you have to speak a play to your teammates? What's coming in? What's going out? Okay, now defensively, what are you being asked to look at through the entire picture? What are you being asked to process? How much of a game plan are you needing to retain? And can you pull back on, like, drawing that information in split second? That's what an NFL coach wants to know, because he doesn't want to feel limited by the processing ability of the quarterback so that now he can't do what he wants to do in a game plan. What he wants is to be able to understand where that guy's coming from. So now I can give you the game plan, mm-hmm. and I can understand that you're processing at a high level. So then our communication throughout the week on game day, we're hitting on this level. It's really hard for coaches, because if they feel they're here, but the processing of their quarterback is here, they can't stay up there. They have to come to his level. I do think that's where great coaching comes in, because the coach's ability to say, all right, I'm going to find out where you're at, and now I'm going to help you here. When it's tough on quarterbacks is when the coach is up here constantly getting frustrated as a player down here. That gap actually hinders the progress of the team.
Fantastic. John Beck here in the Rich Eisen Show. All right, I'm going to remove you from this lane of just your prospects and potentially put you in a lane where you're not usually talking about it, but if you don't mind, turn you into a little bit of a pundit here. How many quarterbacks do you think go in a row to start this draft?
Ooh, I mean, I definitely think that it's going to be a 1-2-3.
You do?
Yeah, I for sure do. These are conversations that, like, you know, after we're off the field, right, me and my partners, we go up to the office, all right, like, what do you think is going to happen?
Right.
I do think it's a 1-2-3. I think, you know, Arizona, I think it'd be really easy for them just to stay there, because, you know, I think all the people that are guessing who they're going to pick, I think they're right. I think it gets really...
You're talking about Marvin Harrison Jr. You told a story in the break about you were at a
CJ Stroud's pro day, and Marvin, as an underclassman, was able to catch balls at CJ's pro day.
And
you could just see the scouts and the GMs just, oh my gosh. Like, you know, you'd have thought that it was also a day for people to watch him, even though he was just helping CJ. But it was, you know... Very, very, very impressive.
That good.
Yeah.
Okay. And I heard that he told some scouts that day, I hope you got a good look, because this is going to be my pro day.
I mean, well, he didn't need to do anything else. I mean, look, like, I'm not opposed to the guys that have already shown so much. Like,
right.
What's a pro day? What's a pro day really for? You know, you're going out there in shorts and a t-shirt. Like, I like that the quarterbacks go out and throw, because what the quarterbacks get to do, they can show some things to the teams that maybe the teams haven't seen a lot of on tape. Or sometimes we can cater to what their offense is going to ask of them. All right, let's throw a little bit of that in this pro day. Or let's show some things that, you know, the coaches ask, well, I haven't seen enough of this. Can you show some of this on the pro day? Awesome. But man, if you're a wide receiver, like, you got to be smart also. Like Rome, he didn't do Washington's pro day, and I didn't think one thing about it because I'm like, what do you have to prove on pro day? You know, you've ran all of these routes. They can see you get in and out of breaks. They can see you go stretch and catch a ball over their shoulder. They can see so many of those things.
He did the combine too. I mean, yeah. As well. Sure. So I kind of interrupted you there. Sorry to do that. So
no,
you said as Arizona does what you think they're going to do at four.
I think five, six. I think all of those picks is where it gets really interesting because I do think that it's going to be teams have to decide, do we then trade up for the quarterbacks that are there? And how far do we think we have to trade up, or do we think they can fall to us? You know, like I know that everybody's wondering, well, what's Minnesota going to do? Like, I think they have a decision I have to make of, you know, do we go up or do we see if somebody comes to us? You know, do we try to figure out what the Giants are doing? Do we try to figure out what some of these other teams are doing? Or do we feel like, you know what, instead of trying to figure out what they're doing, let's just do like what San Francisco did 3 years ago where they said, we're just going to make sure we get the pick of whoever is going to be after that.
Well, I think this may sound crazy, but now I can say whatever I want to say, and it's now been inoculated with me saying it sounds crazy. But if you look at the Giants with Daniel Jones injured, and obviously before he got injured last year, what he looked like, and I apologize if any of these are your guys.
No, that's okay.
And then you look at, you know, Aiden O'Connell is sitting in Vegas, and you've got Stidham in Denver. That the one team that could actually come through this draft, if they don't get any of these guys to fall to them, that can just say, let's see what we got, is Minnesota. Because Sam Darnold could be like the next Goff or Baker Mayfield. And I understand that the idea is to get the next Mahomes. I get it. Or the next Stroud. But I don't know if Minnesota has to do what I think the other teams that I just mentioned have to come away with in this draft. My two cents.
Well, I think Sam's talented. And look, Sam's a guy that I root for. He's a San Clemente kid from down, you know, South County, Orange County. I think that he's a guy that had to go through the Jets situation.
There's a lot of those.
You have to battle through that, you know?
Right.
And so he's a guy I'm pulling for. You know, he's a guy that went to Carolina, played in games. He's a guy that got to be in San Francisco and got to be around. I love when quarterbacks get to be around certain coaches, around certain situations. Maybe they're not taking all of the snaps, but they're bringing all of that information and data and experience into their own game. And so, yeah, if he's starting for them, I mean, I think that there's some really good things that can happen for Sam and for the Vikings. And he's definitely capable.
Okay. Also, we mentioned Penix and McCarthy and Jaden Daniels being your guys, John Beck. That's about, I don't know what the exact percentage is, 15 to 20% of the Washington Commanders' final top 30 palooza that they had together.
Yeah.
What's your two cents on that?
On why they all went together?
What did you think of it?
I mean, I just, you know, look, I would say Adam Peters, I know Adam really well.
Yes.
And I think he's doing what he wanted to do. Saying that this
What's will, the idea behind
I don't know, you know.
Okay.
I think some of it's surrounded, you know, when ownership gets a chance to meet guys.
Yes.
You know, I'm sure that probably played into a bit of the scheduling of making sure that, hey, everybody that's in this building wants to know who could potentially be the face of our franchise, including the owner. I'm sure some of that stuff played into it.
Did you prep them for what, when you heard they were going? To prep them like this is...
Teams have spoken to them. Our prep a lot deals with the pre, you know, combine interviews, you know, private workouts and all that stuff. You know, at this point in time, they have a good idea. They just kind of want one final little, like, all right, let's like kind of do this one more time.
But what's the one more, you know what I mean?
I don't know. Like, I mean, look.
Top Golf and just
to see how they
talk to
one another? Like a lot of the times it's, let's walk them through the building. Let's introduce them to all the people in the building. Let's just see.
En masse?
What would it be like if they came into our building? I mean, look, all three of them are great dudes. Like, I can give you tons and tons of reasons of why all three of them would be great picks. And I can also tell you why, regardless of NFL franchises, where all of those guys, I would say, I hope that this or this or this does not happen to them. Because, like, I just don't think that there are just quarterbacks that are immune to disaster. Like, throw me in a disaster and it'll just go great because you picked me. Like, I don't agree with that at all. I think it's the, I love the sport because it's a team sport. It's very hard on quarterbacks because it's a team sport at times. And it's very great for quarterbacks because it's a team sport at times. It's the ultimate challenge for, you know, you have ownership, you have administration, you have coaches, you have players, you have all of these things. And there's this figurehead of the quarterback. And so much of it flows towards him, good or bad. The crap from upstairs flows down towards the quarterback. And the great that the room creates helps lift that quarterback.
Well, I've heard so many theories, again, on my phone, text, calls about this Washington Commanders prospect of Palooza being, they wanted to just jam everybody together and see who might, wind up being in the punch bowl. You know what I mean? And sticking out.
Yeah. I mean, people sometimes do that.
Or they're like, you know, last 20, 30 years in this town with this franchise, we've had a reputation and we want to show everybody, hey, in 4 to 5 years from now, if you're a free agent, you saw what we were like. You know, like, I other than that, though, I just don't understand bashing everybody together, or at least I shouldn't say that because I wasn't there. Just bringing everyone together when you can have a one-on-one time with them.
Yeah,
you know?
I mean, I'm not saying this because this is why they did it. I'm just thinking, like, if I was in that situation, you know, sometimes it's not bad to, like, sometimes if you meet somebody and then you spend a day or two and then you meet somebody else and then you spend a day or two, and then the third person comes in. Now you're potentially 4 or 5 days removed from the first person.
I got you.
So maybe there's an element of, look, we can bring all of them in. We can have our ownership here. We can have everybody right here. And we're going to see them on the same day, in the same environment, in the same everything. And we'll create some one-on-one time. You know, and look, again, I'm not saying that's what happened. I have no idea what happened. But I'm just kind of saying this maybe is what happened. Like a chance to, like, I see you. I've made time, hour. Then I see you. I see you. Okay, now let's go talk. We were all seeing the same guys on the same day in the same building, in the same atmosphere. Mm. It's not one in Baton Rouge, one in North Carolina, another in Seattle. Like, it's everybody in our spot at the same time. Because I think sometimes when you do the private workouts, you hop on a private jet, the staff flies over, you work a guy out. Then you go back to your place, you sit and talk about it. Hey, we got 2 days later, we're going to do the private jet thing for another workout. So now you're seeing your 3 or 4 guys in a 2 week window. How fresh in your mind is really that time you spent with that first guy?
All right, before I let you go, tell me your golf story. Oh,
okay.
John
Beck. All right, so I get drafted by the Miami Dolphins, right? Super excited. Yeah. I want to be the next great quarterback there. Hey, we got the Miami Dolphins golf event. All right, I'm just, you know, I'm fresh out of college. I didn't pack my golf clubs. I didn't pack my golf gear. I quickly ordered on Nike Elite some, like, a golf shirt or something like that. And I didn't have any golf shoes out there. But I thought, you know what? Like, I'm not really a golfer. At that time in my life, if I could pick between golfing or, you know, going and fly fishing on a river or hunting, I chose the being in the outdoors, hunting and fishing. So, but it's cool. I'm just going to go play in this event. Like, I'm a rookie. Like, I'm not really that important in this event. I roll up. The head guy finds me. Hey, John, your cart's right over here. I walk up to my cart. John Beck, Dan Marino. And I was like, holy crap, I'm playing golf with Dan Marino today. And I got my flip-flops. I'm just like chilling. Dan comes over. Hey, John, great to meet you. Excited to, you know, congrats on getting drafted. You got flip-flops? And I'm like, yeah, Dan, I'm not really that much of a golfer. And he's like, if you want, I'll go buy you golf shoes right now. I'm like, no, look, you know, like, wow. And my friends to this day have said, John, you blew it. You should have let Dan buy you golf shoes.
Yeah, you should have.
Because those forever in time would be the golf shoes Dan Marino bought you. So I blew that one. So we get on the course. I just think I'm going Jim McMahon style here. So I flip off the flip-flops. I'm barefoot. And Dan was just like, baby, you golf barefoot? I'm like, look, Dan, I'm just kind of winging this thing, bro. Like, wow. I'm kind of here. And so throughout the day, I'm all over the map. Dan, I can tell, wants to win this thing. Like, when you see the competitive eyes of Dan Marino on game day, you see the competitive eyes of Dan Marino on the golf course. Oh, and so he is just, like, stroking these balls. And I'm, like, searching for mine out in the woods.
Oh,
like,
no.
I mean, it just felt like... It was not a good feeling. 18 straight holes. So he's like giving me tips and everything, you know, try this. We're probably like hole 13. And he was just like, hey, John, I just think from here on out, you know, I've given you every tip I can.
He gave up.
he kind of gave
up. He topped out.
He kind of gave up. He kind of realized the scorecard wasn't going great. John's in flip flops. Dan wanted to enjoy his day. I feel bad. I just saw Dan like a couple weeks ago too. Like,
does he remind you of it to this day?
No. But I wish I could go out and play with him again. Cause like I learned a really good lesson later. Like, you don't have to be a great golfer when you play those events. You just have to dress like you are.
That's it.
Because then the only people that know you're just not a great golfer are the people you play with. But everybody else just assumes, well, he's dressed like a really good golfer. Great.
Well, next time you go there, though, I would suggest go in flip-flops so you can get free shoes from Dan Marino.
I should have done it.
That's the mulligan you should take. Thanks for coming, John.
Yep, you're welcome.
Really appreciate all this time. Congrats on everything that's going on in your career, and best of luck to every last kid that you've been helping out. So thank you. Got John Beck right here on the Rich Eisen Show, back with Hour 3 and more of your calls in a sec.
Our house is a mess. Come on in.
I'm Amber Wallen, internet comedian and host of your new favorite podcast, Fly on the Wallen.
Okay, that's pretty presumptuous to assume that this is going to be their favorite podcast, by the way.
Anyway, that wasp that you just heard interrupt me is my husband.
And co-host, Benjamin Wallen.
Listen in as we discuss relationships and keeping our sweet baby kid alive.
Fly on the Wallen, wherever you listen.
I have a few questions about Cincinnati that you might have to know if it's true or false. You're from Athens, right?
I am, yeah.
It's a three-hour drive from Cincinnati, right?
Two and a half.
Oh, with a lead foot.
Yeah.
Pretty much. Okay. I've got four aspects of Cincinnati, and I want to know if you're already ready to figure out about this city. I'm just picking that city out of the blue.
Yeah.
Okay. True or false, Cincinnati, true or false with Joe Burrow, everybody. True or false, it's the birthplace of Academy Award-winning director Steven Spielberg.
False.
Is that true or false?
I have no idea.
It is true.
Okay. I didn't know that.
All right, that's number one. Play-Doh was invented in Cincinnati, true or false?
I'm going to go out on a limb and say all these that you're saying are true.
Okay, it is true. Now, just hold on a second. Because you can read a defense doesn't mean that you can read me right now, okay? This pre-snap. Cincinnati is the site of the United States' biggest celebration of Oktoberfest.
That's true.
Okay, you do that right then and there.
I know about the parties, yeah.
Have you been to an Oktoberfest?
I have not,
okay.
No.
Are you going to have to talk about it with your team first?
We'll have to talk about
it. Okay, talk about it with your team. And the number one radio station in Cincinnati is WKRP.
That one, I have no idea.
Before his time,
it's
Rich.
False. There's a famous TV show called WKRP in Cincinnati that is way before your time. Have you never heard of it at all? Gosh darn it.
I'm older than most college football players, but I'm not that old.
I mean, we've heard you're older than Lamar Jackson.
He was in my recruiting class. Yeah.
Okay.
Couple months, I think.
And if you had one choice of a meal, would you pick crawfish or spaghetti with chili?
Crawfish.
Really?
I don't like all the Cincinnati cuisine as far as all that stuff.
Not yet. Grater's ice cream.
I might learn to like it, but we'll see.
Okay. Very good. Joe Burrow wound up being a Bengal, as we all know. Spoiler alert. Back on the Rich Eisen Show Radio Network, I'm sitting at the Rich Eisen Show desk furnished by Grainger with supplies and solutions for every industry. Grainger has the right product for you. Call clickgrainger.com or just stop by. All right, that's the throwing coach of Jaden Daniels. You still want him? If the Washington Commanders take Drake May and Jaden Daniels is sitting there at three, would you take him? Of course you would.
I don't know.
You wanted him half the season.
I have no idea. I know, but it just depends. Day changes, my attitude changes on what we want to do. Trade down. Take Marvin Harrison. Trade back up and take Penix later. I don't know. I'm all over the place. I'm reading so many reports right now. Like the rumor
what did I tell you?
Out of control.
What did I tell you? Starting this program. What did I tell you?
Control.
It's really, I don't know.
Who do you think?
It's crazier than the last time we had five quarterbacks at the
absolutely.
Top where it went 1-2-3.
It's crazy.
With Lawrence and Zach Wilson and Trey Lance and then Justin Fields and Mac Jones were in the mix. This one's even crazier. This one's nuttier.
Is this group better than that group?
I don't know.
Who do you
think? Well, you'd have to assume they are, because take a look at what they've turned into in their first 3 years.
Who do you think is the biggest sure thing at who will go in the top 10? It's Marvin Harrison, right?
out of everybody.
Yeah, in the top 10. Like the short guys who thing, will be in the top 10.
I still,
who's the surest thing?
I am still of the belief Caleb Williams is a sure thing.
More than Marvin Harrison?
Yes, because Marvin's depending on somebody throwing him the football.
Okay.
Just that alone.
Right.
Who has the ball in their hands and decides, and who is dependent on the one who decides to give him the ball? That alone makes the difference. But you hear stories again, like the one that Joel Klatt told us 2 years ago. He's the best wide receiver in football right now, both levels, college, pro. You just heard, you know, the latest person talking about the C.J. Stroud pro day where scouts were more impressed with him than they were even with Stroud. And look how impressive Stroud turned out to be. I still think Caleb Williams looks, I mean, he just looks the part, man. He's exactly what you're looking for in this day and age. And exactly what I just said. Hey, if the Vikings don't wind up with a quarterback in this year's draft, if the Giants, the Raiders, and the Broncos don't wind up with a quarterback in this year's draft, one of those teams we're assuming will come out of this draft without a quarterback. The one that can afford it the most, I think, is Minnesota. Let's see what Sam Darnold looks like. And it's entirely possible he has a second wind and is Jared Goff or Baker Mayfield. And I then even added after that, but everybody's looking for the next Mahomes. So go for the next Mahomes, who looks like it's Caleb Williams.
Yeah.
With all due respect to him, that it's a big, huge ass shoe to fill. But number of times I would just see a play from him at USC, certainly in his Heisman Trophy year, I'm like, Rick Dalton GIF, like, that's it. That's what you're looking for at the next level. That's it. Off platform, great ability, star quality, can handle the spotlight, wants the spotlight. Winner. Chicken dinner. Yeah, which, by the way, is what I had with Ryan Poles and Eberflus the night that somebody at the Combine thought I was Ryan Gosling. Had chicken dinner.
Man, I forgot indeed. About that.
The wine was flowing that night.
It was indeed. Not just at our table, clearly.
I mean, other people were drinking.
So in other words, just putting it all together, when you look at Caleb Williams, that's enough. Thank you.
Wow. Look at you.
That's just weaving.
Just weaving. It's a tapestry.
Just painting. You know, painting.
Picasso.
Thank you.
Tom Cruise, Minority Report.
Here so that's, it comes.
That's my answer. Caleb Williams, I still think is sure thing, but obviously Marvin Harrison Jr. is right there too. Oh. Hour three, Ramon Rodriguez is coming up in studio.
Ramon.
So
it's flying by right now. Today's flying
so, but
by.
Honestly, right? Compared to that quintet of quarterbacks that were taken in the top half of the first round.
Right, five in the top
of
15.
The 2001 NFL draft.
Mm-hmm.
This does seem to be a more decorated group, wouldn't you say? Zach Wilson at BYU and Trey Lance at North Dakota State.
Yeah, none of those.
Trevor Lawrence, Justin Fields, and Mac Jones were decorated quarterbacks at the other level.
But no Heisman Trophy winner, right? That was Devontae Smith's year, if I'm not mistaken, right? 2021. But none of those guys won the Heisman.
There's two of them here.
Trevor Lawrence was
last
kind of,
two.
Trevor Lawrence was kind of anointed, you know, years
well,
in advance.
Well, he was can't miss, dude.
Caleb Williams has been the number one pick for over a year now.
Right.
Yeah, I would say this is a little bit more decorated, more celebrated.
You got a national champion in there?
Yeah.
And I'm
no, national champion, two Heisman Trophy winners.
A national champion, national title runner-up.
And then, you know, the guy like Bo Nix has been playing for a long time.
Don't forget about him.
He's racked up tons of stats. Yeah, I think so. Yeah, a little more decorated. Ugh. Don't screw this up. I'm talking to New England right now. Don't screw it up.
Speaking of Justin Fields, his new head coach spoke. We've got two Mike Tomlin sound bites coming up. Right. Oh, baby.
Let's go.
That's coming up in hour number three, top of the next hour. I wouldn't move if I were you. And then Overreaction Monday podcast. Give a listen to that when we record it later on.
the Rolling Stone Music Now podcast gets inside the biggest stories with Rolling Stone senior writer Brian Hyatt.
Now here is my conversation with Jacob Knoll. Your story is an amazing one, and obviously you lost your dad when you're only 1 year old.
It was definitely a screwy way to grow up. I think that a lot of people never heard of who I am, and then they see me join this band and they must think this kid must have just handed everything, or nepotism kid. It's a gift that I have an opportunity to sing in such a big band like my father and my uncle's band, Sublime.
Rolling Stone Music Now, wherever you listen.